The governor indicates the RFRA crisis is over. Is it? The U.S. Conference of Mayors is coming to town. Greg Zeller for Congress, and the red light turned green light for euchre tournaments at senior centers. That, arming National Guard recruiters, brickyard picks, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 24, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Mike Pence suggested that the RFRA crisis is over, and for evidence, he pointed to improvements in the state's economy. That's why he kicked off a ceremonial bill signing by holding up a newspaper headline about the state's unemployment rate. It's below 5% for the first time since 2008, despite threats from around the country to take business out of Indiana during the religious freedom controversy in March and April. The governor believes the RFRA fix, which created limited equal rights protections, is a reason for the improvement.
Is there or is there not a need to do more in terms of protections statewide for gays and lesbians?
I think our economy speaks for itself. Our economy is strong and growing stronger. We'll leave debates about the future for the future.
You think it's an economic issue only?
Well, Jim, I really do believe that that we found a way through that difficult period last spring to calm the waters. And the facts speak for themselves.
Is the governor making the proper read on this situation? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, is the crisis over?
Now, of course the crisis isn't over. The governor's in la-la land, okay? We have, the unemployment rate has gone down, which is good. Of course, there are less people looking. The problem is that we're getting jobs that aren't paying a living wage. We're getting service jobs, we're getting call center jobs, we're getting warehouse jobs that are paying $10 an hour. If you look at the other underlying economic indicators, like the GDP, the gross domestic product of Indiana, we're 18% of the national average. Our income continues to decline. We're now at 86 cents on the dollar nationally, and the numbers go on and on. And his argument makes no sense. Is he saying that if the unemployment rate goes down further, maybe we could take the fix away and we could discriminate against more people?
Don't think he's suggesting
There's no
that.
Moral question here? I mean, is it only economic? You know, part of the problem here is the kinds of jobs we want are the kinds of jobs that young and educated people have. And those young, educated people want to come to a tolerant state, and we're not giving that image.
But ever since the crisis hit, he's tried to emphasize jobs and education. He thinks this is his strength.
Well, certainly, and they are strengths. And, you know, the fix accomplished what it was intended to do. And the governor deserves to celebrate the state's economic successes. And frankly, there are several of them that he can point to just over the last few months. Thousands of jobs at Amazon, GM, conventions like the FFA, really big deal, big ticket items that will spur more economic growth for the state.
Is this an Indiana phenomenon or a national phenomenon?
Well, what I do know is the unemployment is not only as low as it's been since 2008, but it's the lowest among our neighboring states. So while I think the nation is coming back, Indiana is coming back very strong and stronger than some of our neighbors, and it should be celebrated, and Governor Pence deserves to talk about that. I mean, that is part of his record.
Okay, but part of the problem is that he tied it to RFRA in the conversation that was being held with reporters there, and it's apples and oranges.
Well, the logic does seem strained, at the least. If you're suggesting that the fix was somehow an economic development tool, the question then becomes, are we better off then as a state had we never had the RFRA debate in the first place? In other words, was that a springboard to higher numbers? I guess the real question is, yes, that may have been a mitigator. The situation could have been worse when you had states saying, we're boycotting you, we're not coming there, our officials are not allowed to travel there. This was at least a mitigating factor, but the real question would have been, what would the unemployment rate be had the RFRA debate never happened? My suggestion and my guess is it'd be exactly what it is now, because I think it has really nothing to do one with the other.
Clearly, he's trying to get past it.
Oh, he desperately wants to get past it. The problem is the Republicans didn't actually go ahead and do what the folks who oppose RFRA want, which is to put change the civil rights law to put sexual orientation in that law. As long as that's not done, this issue is going to continue to dog Republicans until the election or thereafter. And so whether you agree with that or not, this is going to become an issue and stay an issue for Republicans.
And I think that's absolutely clear. He doesn't want to fix the problem and has never wanted to fix the problem.
After that discussion, his spokesman said that he's studying the issue and that he has an open
study.
Mind.
There's nothing to study. You just amend the code and you fix the problem. And the problem is, when he talks about the unemployment, that's great, okay? But the GDP is 18% of the national average and lower than every surrounding state, including Kentucky.
Studying the issue and listening to Hoosiers is the line out of the governor's office. What does that mean?
Yes, and when the fix happened, Republican leaders said, we hear you and we are open to having this discussion and listening. And it's my understanding that the governor and other Republican legislative leaders are having discussions around the state, are listening to people on all sides of the issue in order to prepare for the next session and to determine what is the best way to move the state forward. And so I believe that they will be prepared
Do you think that the governor will back statewide protections, a human rights amendment?
Well, I can't predict what he's going to do. What I do believe is that they are having discussions and that they are listening to people on all sides to make that determination,
and that they're prepared.
They know that this issue is coming. Everyone knows and they'll be prepared.
They can listen
comes.
And they can talk, but if they don't fix it, that problem is still there.
Well, we have a few months to see what happens.
They could have fixed it last session.
Fix were, in fact, an economic development driver, you'd see consistent growth across the state. But what you have, of course, as you always would, are pockets of portions of the state that have seen more job growth than others. Well,
I think the governor did.
If there's somehow that's
he's trying to say it didn't hurt. It didn't hurt is what.
Lots of luck.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is the RFRA crisis over? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, it's too soon to tell. Last week's question, is a $2 billion surplus too big? 58% said yes, 23% said no, 19% said, I'll tell you at the end of the two-year budget period. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Here's another good sign post-RFRA. The U.S. Conference of Mayors will hold its national convention in Indianapolis next year. Mayor Greg Ballard says it's a big deal, not just because 300 city leaders from around the country will be here, but also because of the timing. The conference will be at the end of June during a presidential campaign year. Ballard expects the conference to attract candidates for the White House.
This will be an immense amount of national media attention coming to Indianapolis, and we always put on a great show, so I'm really looking forward to this one.
Jennifer Hollowell, how big a deal is this?
This is a big win for Mayor Ballard, and it's a big win for Indianapolis.
Because a lot of those mayors were people who canceled travel to Indianapolis during the RFRA crisis, right?
Well, some of them threatened that. But it's a big win for Indianapolis. You know, Mayor Ballard is very well respected among the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and it does put Indy on a national stage, center stage, with a lot of national leaders, and it will also kind of give us an opportunity to showcase some of the innovative things that we've done under Ballard's administration. And, you know, they hope that it'll attract presidential candidates, and I think there's a good chance that it will.
One of the biggest concerns about RFRA was how it would affect the convention business.
Right.
This is a good indicator that the convention business is alive and well.
I think when the business leaders and the religious leaders and the university leaders of the state stepped forward and said, fix it with RFRA, and got the quote, fix that at least ameliorated some of the harshest problems with the statute. I think that helped a lot. And certainly Indianapolis and Mayor Ballard had been against RFRA from the beginning, so it would seem harsh to penalize them. So this is a big deal for the city. I also know, being part of some of these national conferences, you can't turn them on the dime, and most of them are projected out 5 years. So having the RFRA fix let everything stay as it was.
I don't think that determination, though, was made until just recently, is my understanding.
Right, but I think the RFRA fix with the city, with the business leaders and religious and university stepping forward,
so
is what
kept
it here.
So the fix did what it was intended to do, so that's good.
Right.
We're moving forward.
Right, but if it hadn't been done, if they had not all come forward and demanded that, I don't think it would be coming here.
All right, Leslie, do you really think we'll get presidential candidates here for that?
You know, I think actually that there's a very good shot of that, because that kind of a conference gets some national media attention, draws media in. It's not about coming to Indiana in that case. It's about talking to this very important
right.
group of people with some national media there.
Mitt Romney came here in 2012 to talk to the American Legion convention. He did no local stops outside the convention.
Yeah, exactly. It's not about talking to Hoosiers. It's about talking to a national audience, and you've brought together an influential group of people to do that before.
Certainly no downside to this.
No, I don't see any downside at all. It's good for Indianapolis, good for Mayor Ballard, good for the state of Indiana. And you're right, it will be an interesting event. It will draw a lot of national media and a lot of attention. And there will, I think, in all likelihood, be presidential candidates. We've seen, I was trying to scratch my memory before, and you helped me out. It was National Council of State Legislatures that had a similar event here
back in the 80s
that we were both there, embarrassed to say. And there was quite a, cavalcade of...
It was earlier in the cycle.
Number of candidates, and yeah. This will too, because for the reasons mentioned, urban issues are very important. This is a constituency that's obviously intersects with that.
Here are a couple of interesting facts. Attorney General Greg Zeller thinks RFRA is unnecessary, at least at this point. And while he is eligible to seek re-election, the Republican won't be on the ticket with Mike Pence next year.
Greg Zeller made the announcement in Jeffersonville. He is running for Congress in the 9th District. He wants to go to Washington.
I will be a tireless advocate for law enforcement, our criminal justice system, homeland security, and national defense.
We're not going to wait for Washington.
That was Zeller bashing Washington on election night 2012. If you're wondering what has changed between then and now, the RFRA controversy stands out. RFRA opponent and political strategist Bill Osterly says Zeller is a smart guy.
He understands where the party is on a statewide basis right now, and he's trying to plot a course inside of that. I mean, he's a very good politician, very capable guy, and he pays attention to events.
Leslie Weidenbender, is Zeller's move a reflection on the governor?
I actually think that it is a reflection on his desire to be a part of Congress, and I think he sees this as an opportunity with the 9th District redrawn, and it's still including... I do. I can see that you disagree
with leaving,
me, but...
He's a known entity in the State House, has what would appear to be an easy chance at re-election, and he's leaving that to go to a contested Republican primary. There are already two other Republicans running.
I think he wants that seat. I do. I think he wants to represent his constituency where he used to live, where he grew up. I think he sees this as a real opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty valid assessment.
Sorry, Jim.
I mean, it's a... Well, yeah, what are you looking for?
I can tell you that he's been advised that he shouldn't be the baby that gets thrown out with the bathwater.
He has been careful, I think, from the beginning to... He's, somewhat cut distancing himself. But I don't think if this were not a seat that he had an eye on for some time, these opportunities aren't frequent in terms of the when they come up. I mean, he has roots there. It's not as if he's just sort of deciding I'm going to all of a sudden move to a part of the state with which I have no familiarity. And,
yeah, but I think all that's true. You were surprised by this move, weren't you?
Well, I do think it's a little bit unusual, and I could downplay Zeller the way Pete Seat did last week when he failed to mention that Todd Young is a Marine officer and a Naval Academy grad, setting fundraising records for the state, but I won't. Zeller is a big name in the South, and his strength in the South is a big part of the reason that he won a convention fight in 2008. And so, you know, he has a lot of advantages going into that race. But it is contested, and there are two state legislators who have you know, defied the odds in winning campaigns
Aaron
before.
Hutchin and Brent Waltz, who
and,
are running.
You know, yeah. I mean, who would have predicted that Todd Young would be victorious over Mike Sodrill, who is a well-known, highly respected name in southern Indiana in much the same area?
Yeah.
Greg Zeller's problem is that he has been Mike Pence's alter ego on all of these fights. I mean,
well, he's been his
waded
attorney.
In. He is the attorney for the state. He is not the attorney for the governor. And there's a distinction here, okay? He's the one that said nothing about RFRA when RFRA was out there. He was all for repealing Obamacare and depriving 350,000 Hoosiers of health care. He was all for the only thing he drew the line on, I think, was the immigration. Is that right? Immigration that he drew the line on. But he was all in there on no. He was as close to him as he could possibly be. And now, when the bottom falls out, the rats are running off the ship. And that's what's going on.
And now there's an opening for Attorney General. Steve Carter's looking at it. Apparently Todd Rokita's looking at it.
I've heard a handful of names of folks who are looking at that race. And, I mean, the one thing I'll say is this is a great time to be a young person who wants to be involved in Republican politics, because there are dozens of campaigns with folks looking for people to hire.
And they're just outstanding candidates, so I hope
they
both
are.
Run.
It's
moving
fantastic.
On. The governor stepped in this week to stop a crackdown on euchre. It started when a Muncie senior center was contacted by the Indiana Gaming Commission. It was told that according to state law, the euchre game there is illegal because seniors pay to play. The Indiana Gambling Commission says it responded to a complaint regarding gambling.
We don't believe in gambling. We don't want to gamble. We just want to have fun.
They were charging people $3. $1 for every person went to us for room rent or for overhead costs. One went to snacks. And then the rest of the money went to either purchase prizes or they get together and have parties or go out to eat.
Judy Elton there, preceded by Janine Ashley. John Schwanis, prizes included a can of peaches. What's going on at the Gaming Commission?
Now or a week ago? I think what you had clearly is, maybe a reaction initially that in terms of the perceived crackdown that wasn't well thought out. This is one of those when you stand back and you look at applying what I think the administration has referred to as, and the commission now has embraced as a common sense enforcement approach. That's probably the logical thing. And these come up from time to time. About, two or three months ago, you had interns could no longer tour the State House dome because and their common sense prevailed, and now they can...
In that case, like this
same,
one, the governor
same sort of thing.
In.
So I think the governor enjoys the role of being sort of the final, the Trump card, if you will,
in
common sense.
He does.
In fairness, it's not as if the Gaming Commission went and raided this place. I mean, they got a complaint, they made a phone call, you know, and that got out. And, of course, that's terrible publicity. You can't blame the governor at all for stepping in and... You know, of course he's going to say this is not our priority. But, I think to some degree it's been blown a little bit out of proportion what actually happened in this case.
Yeah,
I don't think seniors should be able to have fun like that. I mean, what are we thinking about here? I want to know when they're going to crack down on the poker games that get held in the legislature at night.
That is a good point.
I view this a little bit differently. I mean, I think that there should be some penalty, I don't know if it's state or local, for when my partner plays off suit when he could throw Trump. Something I think a lot of people would support.
Well, now that Jim has shown everybody's hands from behind their shoulder, I guess.
If they're building a new jail, you know, why stop with just, you know, a fine?
But that's part of the problem. Euchre's the Indiana game,
right?
It's, you would crack down on anything, but not euchre.
It's good that the governor stepped in, but perhaps, you know, in these agencies, a little bit more, a few more people with common sense ought to be there in the first place.
We do have a new person, the long-time Gaming Commission.
Ernie Elton, retired.
Executive director, retired. And I have a feeling this might have been handled slightly more deftly.
If he had still been there.
Moving on. Members of the Indiana National Guard are now allowed to bring their personal weapons to work. Governor Mike Pence signed an executive order in the wake of last week's attack that killed five servicemen in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The order is meant to protect those in recruiting centers and also in armories.
I think it is imperative that we ensure that those who have stepped forward to defend our state and our nation have the ability to defend themselves. And the action that I've taken as governor will see to it that our Indiana National Guard has the ability to do just that.
Jennifer Hollowell, why was that not the case previously?
Well, I don't know, but I am glad that the governor got out in front of this and took this action. And frankly, I think it's important for our troops to be able to protect themselves. And, you know, we're talking about men and women who certainly are very well trained on when and how to use a weapon. And so, you know, he did the right thing. And, you know, frankly, I wish that the president would take action for the country. This is probably one of these cases where he could take action, but he hasn't. So governors
to do what?
Congressmen.
To make this the law.
I think part of the issue here is, should they be able to use government-issued weapons?
Yeah, I mean, okay. They can bring them, and almost all of them have their own weapons to begin with, so they can bring them with it. It's just too bad it's a commentary that this kind of thing has to happen. I mean, I thought the Chattanooga incident was just awful. And when you've got people that are really trying to lay their lives on the line for us and you have somebody attacking them for that, it's beyond reprehensible.
Did the governor act quickly?
Oh, yeah, he did. I mean, yes, he acted quickly. He actually did quite a masterful job, as far as I'm concerned, getting publicity for this. He made the announcement one day at a press conference the following day. I think it had quite a little bit of a campaign feel to the way it was rolled out, but obviously I don't think you're going to find very many people who object to what he was doing.
I think the older policy, the previous policy, at a state level and even at the federal level, is rooted in history. Mm-hmm. Throughout U.S. history, you've had a reluctance to see military personnel armed in a civilian setting. I mean, that's 200-plus-year-old now tradition,
right.
And so time for a change, I guess.
Well,
circumstances may warrant.
Chattanooga was a gun-free zone, and what we've learned is that in gun-free zones, the only people who have guns are criminals.
Right.
You had that same thing. You had a criminal with a gun in Louisiana.
Right.
We have too many guns in this country. Plain and simple.
Finally, local hero Jeff Gordon is about to drive in his final Brickyard 400. Will his swan song be a victory? It's time for our annual Brickyard 400 picks. Ann Delaney, do you dare pick against Jeff Gordon, five-time winner?
No. I hope he wins. I think that would be a great way for him to end his career.
You picked him for the inaugural Brickyard,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah.
Which
okay.
He won.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to be right again.
His hometown, he claims it is his hometown, Pittsburgh, held a Jeff Gordon Day this week. He's been pretty good to Indianapolis and the surrounding area, and it's been pretty good to him, right?
Yeah, I think so. And they had a great parade, and, you know, I think it would be great for him for his last hurrah to win.
But will he win? You have to make a choice.
Well, I can't predict that.
We all do,
right?
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry. There's no wagering here.
It's not the Gaming Commission.
Only your credibility is on the line.
I'm already out on a limb with my brother to say that I think it'd be great for him to win. So I got to stop.
Who can root against Jeff Gordon in this setting for all the reasons you mentioned? Sure. Let's say he gets it.
I'm on this show every year at this time because John Katzenberger always goes on vacation, and I pick Jeff Gordon every year, and there's no way I'm not going to. Today he favorited one of my tweets.
Oh.
Really?
Jeff Gordon did,
and it is one of the highlights of my tweeting career.
What was the tweet?
I was just tweeting about how awesome it was to have a Jeff Gordon Day, and that how can you not love Jeff Gordon? And apparently Jeff Gordon loved that. So
wow.
There you go.
They're probably going to be celebrating together after the race.
This is a big day for me.
That's great.
You know,
who are you picking?
Well, I got to pick somebody else, don't I?
No.
Well, that
you're
is
always
your
the,
personality.
You're always the contrary.
That is your personality. There's no question about that. So go ahead.
Jimmy Johnson.
There you go.
But I hope Jeff wins. I just want to be right. No, I want to be right.
Oh, I see.
Well, then you should pick Jeff Gordon.
Yeah.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.